What we see is the development from a global supply chain model in pharmaceuticals to a fully integrated regionalized model.
70 to 80% of all chemical APIs that we consume in Europe and the US are produced in India and China.
This is Business Insights, a podcast brought to you by global strategy consultancy Roland Berger.
Hello, everybody. This is the first issue of the Roland Berger Business Insight podcast in health-related matters. My name is Thilo Kaltenbach, and I'm a senior partner with Roland Berger in the Munich office. I'm a pharmacist as well, and I'm talking about drug availability today. And with me, there's Stefan Fahrt, principal in our Düsseldorf office. Stefan, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me here today and looking forward to our discussion on the current hot topics of supply chain management in the pharmaceutical industry.
Stefan, this topic is really very urgent and very widely discussed at this moment. Just before flu season, everybody's talking about hundreds of drugs missing in the European supply chains and then also missing, for the patients to cure their illnesses. You know, you work a lot with the pharma industry. So what are the biggest challenges at the moment for the pharma companies in relation to the drug availability?
You're completely right. We live in highly dynamic times. We live in a VUCA world, which is characterized as being volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous. And that is all driving challenges for the pharmaceutical industry when it comes to drug availability. We see that actually since COVID-19 that there are continuous supply disruptions happening. And on top of that, there's also the topic around geopolitical tensions, trade tariffs, a tightening regulation, which is all affecting a stable and secure supply in the pharmaceutical space. And finally, that has shifted actually the mindset of the pharmaceutical industry, moving away from a pure cost focus, having cheap logistic infrastructures in place, towards resilient supply chain setups. And resilience is really the key. As we talk about how pharma companies might deal with that, you're working quite a lot also with governments. How are they dealing with this issue?
Look, the governments, and this is really around the world, there's no specific region or so which has, issues. These are really global issues, are all suffering from shortages of very basic medicines. Medicines that are on the market for a long time, actually, right? Generics, painkillers, paracetamol, very prominent example of a drug which, faced shortages across the world. The root causes are different, but they are always global. Like, some of the root causes, relate to, only very few manufacturing sites in certain parts of the world. For example, in one country, are responsible for the global supply. So we have one single plant, and if there's any issue with this one single plant, there's, no or limited paracetamol available. And this, actually is an issue. And then we see, in the current reporting of the European Medicines Agency, for example, 30 APIs missing. And we heard reports here out of Germany with pharmacists complaining about more than 1,000, drug formulations missing in the market right now. So there's a lot of things that governments need to do, and there's some of the actions are with the governments, like, for example, ensuring a beneficial environment for the pharma industry, for example, incentivizing local manufacturing a bit more, not squeezing out the last penny out of the tenders. But there's also a number of actions that can be taken by the pharma industry. So you're working a lot with those companies. What kind of decision-making processes do you observe?
That's a very good question. Before we maybe jump even to that, let me start outlining a little bit the trends we see in the industry happening. And I think there are three major trends that affect how companies currently look at the topic of supply chain management. The first one is, and he named that already, location. The question about where do I locate my manufacturing sites? Where do I source my intermediates or starting materials from? How do I organize my global network? That is gaining significant importance. Secondly, there's also the question about how do I deal with the diversifying tech portfolio? So we're not talking about small molecules anymore only. We also talk about biologics, we talk about cell and gene therapies, and all of those come with different characteristics and challenges in order to secure a stable supply.
May I ask a question? Because you mentioned very interestingly the chemicals and the biologics. So what is the major difference? What is the reason for supply shortages with chemicals?
Good question. So if we start with chemicals and small molecule active pharmaceutical ingredients, or APIs, we have seen over the history that there has been a quite strong tendency to offshore and outsource production towards Asian countries, predominantly India and China. Right now, 70 till 80% of all APIs consumed in Europe and the US stem from those two countries only. So that shows there is a significant dependency the Western Hemisphere has on those countries.
And what do we expect as a reaction now from, you know, these supply chain shortages? Do we expect the, you know, global model to be shifting towards a local model?
I think that is something that might be interesting to see. However, I personally don't think we will see a significant shift happening here in the future. There are governmental programs running, right? There's the BioSecure Act in the US. Europe is trying to foster local production with the IHADEA as an organization. There's in Germany the pharma strategy of the government. So there's a willingness to relocate production. But here's the challenge. We talk about chemical synthesis of small molecules, which requires a chemical infrastructure, which requires cheap energy, which requires also scale. And this is something you can hardly replicate and bring back. Even with some funding, it's significant CapEx investment and it takes quite a long time. So I personally have doubts that we can bring back what has been offshored. I think the strategy needs to be that we strengthen and foster an environment to keep the production what is currently here, instead of getting to a risk that we offshore and outsource these capabilities.
And the truth might be also a bit in the middle, right? So there will be, of course, you know, projects like single selected projects, you know, coming from for new APIs, chemical APIs being produced in Eastern Europe, for example, broadening a bit the supply chain and increasing the resilience a bit. But it will not shift from one day to another. As we know, this is a hundreds of million programs taking a lot of time. And also understanding that Europe and also partly the US was consciously also offshoring this to other places due to dense population, due to ESG requirements, due to a number of requirements that are, you know, also not so easy to fulfill, and also for efficient reasons.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think it's a matter of which technologies and products we're talking about. Let's talk about high potency drugs for a second. This is a niche. This is a highly growing niche, and also still a lot of innovation is happening there. And here we still see that there is production capacity available in Europe. There are even Swiss companies, which are major suppliers in that respect. And this is a country not well known for being cheap, right? So I think if you're acting smart, select the right products, technologies, and niches where you can still operate profitably, there's also an opportunity to keep production in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Now moving away a bit from the active pharmaceutical substance, right? The actual like chemical synthesis, as you said, for the traditional generic drugs. There's a finished dosage form from, you know, production. What is changing there? What's the trend in FTF?
I think there we need to differentiate again. Are we talking about small molecules, which mostly come as tablets in an oral dosage form? Or are we talking about biologics, which mostly come as injectables or liquid formulations? Again, for basic tablets, there has been significant investments happening in India and China, and there has been a lot of offshoring ongoing. In biologics, the picture is quite different. The pharma industry always has been an industry which has been characterized by long development cycles. That means, if you think about CapEx programs, you have a quite good transparency how to ramp up and when to ramp up capacity. So demand and supply for innovative technologies is quite stable. And especially for FDF and biologics, in the Western Hemisphere, both in Europe and US, we do have sufficient capacities available. Yet, what is happening right now is that there are significant capacity requirements stemming from new drugs such as GLP-1s, the famous obesity drugs currently on the market.
Let me just ask you about the GLP-1 agonist, because this is a very interesting one. We've seen, supply shortages. We've seen response from the pharma companies. One of the major players has decided to buy a full network of CDMO, of an established CDMO player, mainly to cater their own supply. We saw another one, a US company, which also, has rarely happened in the past, with an investment of over $2 billion in the middle of Germany, constructing a new plant for GLP-1. Is that, something which is going to continue, or is that more a transitory phenomenon?
Let's hope that there will be a growing opportunity, so to say. I think the current outlook of the market is tremendous. We expect there will be a $200 billion market in 2030 or 2031 for GLP-1s globally. So the investment opportunity is extraordinary. And that has actually led to more than $35 billion US dollars capex investments over the past 2 years only. If we look, however, a little bit more in the future, there is also work being done on new formulations, meaning we talk about development of oral GLP-1s, we talk about monthly injections of GLP-1s. Now that means if you invest now heavily into in sterile fill and finish and auto-injector capacity, what do you do then when the market shifts to tablets suddenly?
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. So there's definitely, a need for very accurate planning and forecasting and scenario analysis regarding the future demand to put the investments into perspective. So we see this as a snapshot, but we also see a trend. We see a trend towards the injectables in fill and finishing, and we see a trend towards the biologics. And let us stay a moment for the biologic topic, right? The biologics manufacturing still requires a lot of high tech, right? Does that mean we will, in the future have a global model supplying biologics out of the high-tech hubs in the United States, maybe in Europe, maybe even in China in the future? Or will that be also more a local model? So where do you see the trend there?
The way the pharma industry currently is looking at that is they try to localize and regionalize what is possible in order to make pharmaceutical supply chains more resilient. And not everything. And you cannot localize each and every single value chain step. Technologies that have always been close to the market, such as finished dosage forms, such as packaging, also cell and gene therapies, these are all technologies where pharma companies want to be close to the end market, either for cost reason maybe, but also because otherwise the supply chain is simply too complex and it is also time critical. Think about also radiopharmaceuticals, which is also a highly growing area. Every second, every minute, every hour you lose there in the supply chain is actually product loss. So therefore, having a local model for these kind of technologies is very critical.
So you need a global technology and local supply.
For those technologies, I believe we will see that happening more often. On the other hand, where markets might allow due to their size, talking about China, India, for example, I think there we can even think about the establishment of local for local value chains.
Okay. How do you see the development of the modularization and the modular manufacturing? Is that an approach which also helps with the biologics and not just with the chemicals?
That's an interesting development you're mentioning there. There are already early concepts that work on flexible modular production, for example, in mRNA technologies, and they could even allow to localize production in a very, very decentral way. It's still in its infancy, this technology, but for sure, I believe this is something we will see much more frequently in the future.
And this would also make the life easier for the governments, right? They could, inspect a manufacturing container, and then this could be brought into different geographies. And actually, when we look at another trend in the industry, is the personalization or individualization, stratification of medicines towards single patients even, or limited, restricted patient populations. This would mean that you could have this modules also placed close to the patient. So we could see containers in university hospital environments very close to the patient producing cell and gene therapies.
That's correct. And if we think that a little bit through, manufacturing is always a topic that is sensitive because of its IP issues. When we now talk about a local production in modular containers being set up in 30, 40, 50 countries across the world, what is your take on how companies could secure their IP?
That's a very interesting one. That's a very good one. I think what we see in terms of IP, growing sensitivity towards the different geopolitical areas, and we see a willingness to actually keep the IP and keep the risk low. And one way of solving that would be probably to also disconnect a bit the IP and, let's say the algorithms, for example, for producing a certain pharmaceutical, and to actual production. So that leads us to technologies like 3D printing AI-related manufacturing processes. That could be one of the potential solutions in the future. But, to be very frank and very clear, like in the coming 5 to 10 years, we will see these problems and these issues. We see increasing considerations and management of pharmaceutical companies, where to place the investments, and being or not being active in certain geopolitical areas. And this is something that I think there's no common rule, or that's a bit of a, every company we observe at the moment has their own mindset about potential developments, and also, how they drive their investments towards certain parts of the world, right? Actually, that's something to be very, very much in the center of the network decisions today. Speaking about AI, what's the impact of AI in manufacturing?
I think AI has a tremendous opportunity to increase the supply security and to play a major role in pharma operations and manufacturing. Nevertheless, when we engage in discussions with people which are really close to the shop floor, which are really close to the supply chain management, what we observe is that AI is now at a stage where it can help bring use cases, which are well known for quite some time, really into life. So I think there are many use cases well known when we talk about predictive analytics, when we talk about how to optimize demand and supply planning. All of those use cases from digitalization have been well known, but they were never really successful because they were lacking the intelligence to make use of the data. And I think here is the point of AI. What we currently expect is not a tremendous disruption happening to operations, but rather finally bringing to life where people were working on for 5 or 10 years already.
And what does that mean? Does that mean that some of the pharmaceutical companies turn to AI companies?
I think that's a very tricky question. How much AI capabilities do you need to have internally versus how much can you rely on an external AI partner? Right now, there's still a tendency to partner with external companies because they simply have more knowledge, more expertise in that area.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there's also a risk that you miss out on the core competencies and get into a position where you will only become a supplier of pharmaceutical products only, and the intelligence, the data know-how, the AI is owned by someone else.
We strongly see this in the market, right? We see like every company has a different approach to this. Most of the companies of the established drug makers actually work with the partnerships with AI companies, with software companies. Some of them also pick and choose their AI applications from different companies. Some are entering long-term partnerships with one of the giants in the AI space. And we saw also a third archetype. And I'm not sure whether it's really an archetype because very few companies are doing this. But some of them we've seen also having done major transactions buying into AI companies. So what we see now is the beginning of a trend which may also lead to a situation that some of the pharma companies will also transform to an AI/pharma company. And this is one of the most exciting trends that we see at the moment. And this affects to a large extent R&D, to a very large extent as well our manufacturing. This is our topic today. But it also, you know, of course, goes into areas like marketing and commercialization.
That's correct. And I think if we look at how future resilient supply chain structures can be set up, what I expect is that there will be a strong emergence between R&D and operations. Because operations, for sure, you can think about where do I set up my sites, where do I source my materials from, how do I design my network. But as said, new technologies require a new approach. And when we think about the modular mRNA production, I'm pretty sure that the questions, manufacturing-related questions in the future, need to be early on also already considered in the design of technology platforms. So I think R&D and operations will be much closer in the future.
I couldn't agree more. And we see this actually also at the moment when looking at those new modalities like cell and gene. We also seen it with mRNA and with vaccination, and we see it, you know, in one of the new latest cancer therapies. What we can observe, even extended towards, like, you know, the value chain is a bit compressed, localized towards having R&D, manufacturing, and the patient location almost in one place. And this is a bit, you know, down to the vision of, you know, some of the industry leaders to say, look, we need to improve that bench to bed and bed to bench interaction to speed up the development of the new pharmaceuticals. When it comes to chemical synthesis, an interesting geopolitical aspect is we haven't talked about it a lot, and I think it's already not decided whether the region will go that way or not, but there's a trend in the Middle East to capitalize a bit on the petrochemicals that they have in the space, the energy that they're having, and the good manufacturing conditions. So one of the potential outcomes of this geopolitical play could be that new regions, like, for example, the Middle East, would enter the manufacturing of APIs, benefiting from the petrochemicals that they have in the area, benefiting from beneficial cost structures, actually, in terms of energy, and then producing APIs and helping the companies, the global companies, the global networks, to diversify their risk over different regions in the world.
And from an industry perspective, I think that can really help to, make supply chains more resilient. 70-80% of chemical APIs are sourced from India and China. So there's a very high dependency. And we talk about chemical synthesis, which requires some backward integration into a chemical industry. It requires energy-intensive processes. It's also more cost-sensitive than other production technologies. So if there's an opportunity to leverage the domestic strengths Middle East has, that is a perfect match also with what the pharma industry is currently looking for.
What is required indeed is, because of the very efficient structures already established in India and in China, is actually some upfront investments, some subsidies, probably also from the governments in those places in the Middle East, in those countries, to establish an industry which is supplying chemical substances to the pharmaceutical networks. Actually, what we've seen in our work in the region is actually starting this off, you will always be more expensive, and you may also be a bit slower, and you always been facing availability issues versus the established hubs like in India and China. if you're not taking a bold move there. Actually, you need scale in this industry. You need scale also to be able to provide the prices that are required in the global supply chains. So it's a bit tricky, but once this upfront investment is taken, once the scale has been developed, we could see that, for example, developing towards a hub, a global hub for APIs.
As you've worked quite a lot also with the governments in that region, how are they thinking about even going further? I mean, it makes natural sense to expand that chemical value chain, go into pharmaceuticals, but then on the other hand, you would then ship API to another country and import back again the tablets or the finished dosage forms for the local supply. So are they even thinking about expanding into finished dosage form manufacturing?
It's even interestingly the other way around. Today, they have already generics manufacturers that do finished dosage forms. So you will find tablet production. You will also, in selected cases, find injectables production in the Middle East. So what they need to do is also to do the same backward in, integration that we're talking about, also for the Western companies. And this is a bit of a topic, but we see those initiatives, huge initiatives in Saudi Arabia, in Qatar, in the Emirates, on biologics, on chemical FDF manufacturing, as well as some initiatives also going to the direction of active pharmaceutical ingredients.
That's interesting. So in the end, I could imagine a picture where we have regionally integrated supply chains in Asia, in Middle East, in Europe, in the US, but still some technologies for sure will remain more global manufacturing hubs due to the scale issue or due to respective technological expertise being required.
So what is really clear right now is that the world will change. It will not be the global model where of the past where each region would, you know, naturally have a global role in the global supply chain, producing what it can do best, like APIs in China, FDF in India, biotech in the United States and Europe. It will mingle. And at the end, we come to a local integrated supply chains, just as you say, which then will maybe also address the issue we were here for today, increasing the drug and medicines availability in the different regions.
So looking at the future, what would you expect in terms of drug availability? How long will this topic of drug shortages stick with us?
It's here far too long. We made the experience now with during the COVID times on major supply chain disruptions. We still see it's not just a transitory thing. It's going on. It's a structural topic. And this structural topic will be addressed. And I would see also due to the, you know, time-intensive CapEx development project that it might take another 3 to 5 years to have a substantial improvement in this field. However, I'm also very positive because we have these initiatives on the government level in the Middle East, in Europe, as you mentioned with Hadia, and in the United States and in Asia. So we see, this transformation taking some time, but we see, you know, it's in the middle of the attention. And now what I also see very positively is that, you know, at the moment, pharmaceutical companies and governments work together. It's not just that there's a government is tendering pharmaceuticals and the pharmaceutical company is trying to achieve the best price possible, but there's a mutual interest in securing the supply chain for medicines for the people in the world. And we think there's going to be lots of work to be done, but like 3 to 5 years of time frame, we will see a better situation.
And in my perspective, the industry has demonstrated its capability to really be flexible and to overcome issues as we have seen during COVID-19, which was a tremendous effort and also a tremendous success in managing global supply of critical drugs. So I think the capability is there. It's probably more also about willingness and regulatory freedom to get things done.
Yeah, it can't be solved by the governments on their own. Governments are not very good entrepreneurs usually. So they need to take measures, actions. They need to also be brave enough to loosen some of the regulatory environment or to transform it towards more digital, to more AI-related regulatory approvals and inspections and On the other hand side, also be cautious of, you know, anchoring supply chain resilience and drug availability into public tenders and, you know, what the healthcare systems also need to pay for. On the other hand side, we say the pharmaceutical companies, as you say, are very, you know, active and can actually, you know, also be of great support here. So we see, you know, there's no alternative to, you know, having a deregulated, you know, industry structure. And also seeing this from an economic standpoint, I think for each of the regions active in the pharmaceutical space, this is a high-tech industry and you can make a lot of money. So thank you very much for this great conversation. So, you know, as we see right now, there's no easy solution, but we see a trend towards integrated supply chains on a regional level. We see a time frame of at least 3 to 5 years to fix, you know, some of the very evident medicine supply shortages that we're facing today. And we see the need of integrating new technologies such as AI, not just on the company side, but also on the regulatory side. What's your take?
Thank you very much for the session today. It was also for me very insightful to get your perspective, especially from a governmental perspective. I think the industry is moving in a way of decentralizing production, and globalization has always been seen as a major win globally. And I think these times are getting challenged now. But on the other hand, with everything we discussed, setting up regional integrated supply chains, a more local production, helping also to localize value generation, seems like this can be a solution to really help navigate through the drug shortages we currently have. And that actually is something that I personally see quite positively when I look at the future of how to solve these issues.
Thank you very much. And then looking ahead maybe for future issues in the Business Insight of Roland Berger in health, we would very much like to focus on AI, which will be also a key topic in the Future of Health publication. We will also have a look at the adjacent industry of medical technology. So in another issue, highlighting the current industry state and also drawing conclusions also, you know, to some of the aspects of the global supply chains. And actually, we will also have a key focus on environmental aspects of the supply chain and ESG-related issues in pharma and in medical devices. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Business Insights by Roland Berger. Roland Berger is a leading global strategy consultancy. Our full-line service portfolio spans across all key industries and business functions. Established in 1967 in Munich, we are renowned for driving transformation, innovation, and business performance around the world. For more information, visit our website at rolandberger.com.